Hello and welcome to the Champions for Social Good podcast, the podcast for people dedicated to social impact. I'm Jamie Serino, Director of Marketing with the Foundations and Corporations Division of Blackbaud. I'm here today with Chris Jarvis and Angela Parker, co-founders of Realize Worth, a consulting firm focused on the design and implementation of employee volunteering programs, and also self-proclaimed as being fun. Welcome, Chris and Angela.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you, Jamie.
It's great to have you guys here. So why don't you start off just telling us a little bit about yourselves and a little bit about Realize Worth.
All right. I'm Canadian, so let's just get that out of the way.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. I guess so. I don't usually get that, but I've been getting that more. But I just for the pronunciation that's going to occur when I say out and about, so gotcha. Your listeners don't get upset. With Realize Worth, this for the last, almost 10 years, but not quite.
Something like that.
And co-founded it with my partner, Angela Parker.
Angela Parker, who is envious of all Canadians at this point and works within client work and co-founded, as Chris said, and we try to all do something in the company in order to be collaborative, but I do a bit of leading business development as well.
Okay. Sounds good. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about some of the work that you guys do, some of the organizations that you work with?
Well, you would think employee volunteering is pretty straightforward. We set up programs with companies, we put employees in positions of leadership, and we try to expand the impact of their programs. We do go beyond that, though. We do something called transformative volunteering. Chris, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's really popular to do volunteering now, companies doing volunteering. Around 2008, this became sort of a decent substitute for, corporate giving, right? The downturn in the economy and whatnot.
Right.
And so more companies are getting into this, but everybody seems to have hit a bit of a ceiling in terms of, whatever metric, right? Participation rates, engagement, culture shift, and folks want to push through that. And so we talk about the difference between transactional volunteering and something that's transformative.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So it's pretty interesting, the idea that taking people to a space where they have to challenge their own assumptions based on what they see and what they experience in that space, that can take us to a place where if we're guided through the process, the challenge of our assumptions becomes something that changes our behavior over time and ideally makes us the kind of people who can empathize with people and issues who we normally would think are different than us.
Right. Mm-hmm. So actually a pretty big topic in our conversations these days, if you can believe it, is in groups and out groups and the human propensity, because of the way we're wired at a neuro level, to define I'm in this group and I'm not in that group. And that means something. And volunteering is kind of an interesting tool to begin to quite literally grow new neural pathways.
That's a real fascinating way to look at it. So are you saying that I'm volunteering with a certain group of people, so I don't feel like I'm in that group, but then if I have a transformational volunteer experience, then maybe I begin to feel more part of that group, or is it something like that?
That's an interesting way to say it, actually. You can imagine going to a typical corporate volunteering event where you're going to help a community. You're going to do something to or for a certain group of people. And you go and you do the work and you feel good and you leave. And that's typically what we refer to as transactional volunteering. And we would say that's good.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
It's good stuff.
It's maybe just not good enough. We think that when you encounter that space, when you imagine sitting down across the table from someone who's homeless, and this is also assuming that you haven't had a lot of experience with homeless people or homelessness before, and you find maybe in a conversation with that person that their story is not so different than your own, then you might begin to think, what have I been thinking about the idea of homelessness? What if the people on the street that you see may begin to look different? And sometimes there's some shame associated with that sense of recognition of you thought one way about something before and you think differently about it. Now, we actually call that a disorienting dilemma. And in that dilemma, you have an opportunity to make a different decision about how you've been acting in the past. It's not that you were wrong before. It's just that you know something new now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's an interesting notion, I think, to make people feel good about that. I mean, there are plenty of people that go through that, and then it could sometimes change their lives, and their opinions change, their actions begin to change. But there are two things that you said that I kind of want to grab onto. And one, I think, for our listeners that run, you know, CSR programs or trying to, you know, get more employees involved, and maybe they are planning, you know, all of these different volunteer activities, and they're finding that the needle's not moving, and maybe, you know, hearing us talk about transformational versus transactional experiences, maybe that helps them get to the bottom of it. So having a transformational experience, I would imagine, would then lead you to want to volunteer more, lead you to want to talk about it, and then you become a sort of advocate for it in the organization. So I imagine that that's the type of thing that you find.
Yeah, I think that's a great summary. So I could just say that, no, that's right, Jamie. You got it. You nailed it. Well, here's the thing. You know, a lot of the CSR professionals that we work with are absolutely buried in managing process. You know, mm-hmm. You're filing reports, you're collecting data, you're chasing someone down. For every hour of skill-based volunteering, you're putting in 4 hours of your time. It's just, it's overwhelming and exhausting. So giving people a sense of agency, I mean real agency, self-determination, the knowledge, the systems they need, and allowing them to take action in communities where they live and work based on what their intrinsic motivators are, that's a far easier. Because then you move from managing people, you know, thousands of people, AT&T, what, 275,000 people? That's a lot of people. Even if only a fraction of them volunteer, that's a big job at a big department. And you move to a process, you know, who was it who said, if you gave me the right kind of lever or leverage, I could move the world? Like
someone
fulcrum,
smart.
Something. I'm over my pay grade with that reference. But the learned listeners among you, you know what I'm talking about.
I saw it on The Big Bang Theory.
There you go. I need to watch more TV? Network TV, yeah, to learn.
Yeah. So what kind of advice would you give, or, you know, do you give when you engage with your clients that are, you know, in that type of situation, either dealing with very large groups or just trying to move the needle on employee engagement?
So Angela does a lot of work with a couple of clients we have right now that are instituting this more of a transformative model. What would you say? Okay, so there's a big picture of what we want to do here, right? Like giving people agency and having them change. Awesome. That sounds great. But the day job, what would you say their biggest issues are?
Well, you both sort of alluded to this point earlier. I can't tell you how many CSR practitioners I talked to the first couple sessions, phone call sessions, I actually refer to them as sessions because they feel kind of like therapy, where you're saying to someone who was so excited to get into a meaningful job.
Yeah.
They thought, finally, I get to do something within business where I can make a difference. And then they find themselves ordering T-shirts and saying a lot of no's to people and not giving away the money they thought they'd be able to give away, and finding that people aren't volunteering like they thought they would. They can't figure out motivation. They can't figure out why, when they gave everybody what they asked for, people are still not participating. It can be a very discouraging job. So the first thing we do is talk about that realistically. We talk about how this is a psychological conversation that we're having. We're talking about what it is that motivates people to do something that they don't have to do, that we're saying can bring them to this enormous place of, as Chris said, having agency to make a difference in the world, to do something with the fact that most people feel like they can't do anything with the problems they see around them. But you have to start with the basics. You know, you have to start with design and strategy and looking at a value bundle, bringing together the kinds of things that people want to accomplish in their lives anyway, and allowing that to be part of their volunteer experience. And that takes some real in-the-weeds work. But over time, we see some incredible reward, particularly among the employees who have been sitting around waiting for someone to ask them to participate in a program like this that really means something and has impact.
That's great. So that leads me to the other point that I was thinking of as you were speaking about this, is that, you know, just going beyond engagement programs, when you're talking about having a transformational experience or, doing something good, are you finding that, more and more people, more and more organizations are stepping up to, meet the problems that are out there in the world right now?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's a widely discussed topic, but it kind of has been for a while, right? Like, the problem is you end up kind of reusing the same folks who showed up at the last focus, pillar, area, thematic goal, whatever it may be for your company, right? And what you want to do is get more people involved, and you want to get them more involved more often, just once a year for 4 hours. I think we've come to understand that's not moving the needle on social issues, and maybe not internally. Mm-hmm. So what really matters, and so we should probably explain what we mean by transformative. So a transformative change, this is based on a transformative learning theory, although we were kind of tracking with it before we even knew that existed. But the biggest metric for us is that individuals who go to this, what we call transformative space, have an experience, and they try and bring meaning to that experience. And in that process of sense-making, which is what it's technically called, they find that over a period of time, there's a change in a psychological change, so the way they think about the world. There's a convictional change, the way they believe, revisions of their belief system. And then there's a behavioral change, so the way they actually act in the world changes. And if those things happen, then we can get lasting effect, right? Like, it's not just people showing up and putting in some hours to paint a wall or, clean up a park. Those things matter, and they can be used. But the most important thing isn't how much work we get done, but how much a person is transformed in the doing of that work. So, I don't know if I actually addressed the issue.
Well, let me go back to the question, because that's exactly right, Chris. No, you're exactly on the right track, which is our company's picking up on this stuff.
Oh, right.
And I think that is because of these understandings. Companies are finally more strategic. We used to have to tell companies, come on now, put employees in positions of leadership.
Well, wait, we would never talk to them like, we would never say, come on.
Chris never would. Chris is nice.
Tough love.
Right. Come on, guys. Put employees in positions of leadership. Put together a volunteer council. And they do that now. Companies know that now. And it is such a relief, because the conversation has become very interesting. You go to conferences now, and they're talking about, that's all good. My people are in the right positions, but I want people volunteering for the first time, yeah, and not just to volunteer. We know now the act of volunteering, that's a means to an end. Let's find out what happens in people because of this. Mm-hmm. What does it mean for the company? What does it mean for the community? What does it mean for that individual employee themselves? And that's the conversation we're having now. So I do think there's been a huge shift in the way companies talk about this and how smart they are, and there's an incredible uptake in the concept of transformation.
Yeah, Jamie, you just had Dr. Harden on a couple weeks ago, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And she talked a lot about this, and she put it in the context of the global movement of Impact 2030 as well, which I thought was great. And because there is this acknowledgement that while that is good, it's maybe not good enough for what we want to achieve.
Yeah, so what do you mean by that?
Well, whether what we want to achieve, in the case of what Dr. Harden was talking about in terms of the Sustainable Development Goals, mm-hmm, or a lasting cultural effect in our company. If we want people to be better team players, share their knowledge, stay longer. So we had this one client who had a retail outlet, and it was really fascinating. I'll give you a short version. We kind of went in undercover. We're not very good undercover. I think we gave it up in the third question.
We got really excited to tell you who
did.
We are.
Yeah. Okay, I don't care what you answer. Here's who we are. Blah, 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 blah. They were really polite. They're Canadians. So anyways, they said we basically asked them about their volunteering program, because we were fortunate enough to be able to help design it. And they walked us through all the things that happened at the store, how people were really involved, how they took on this focus area around health, how they brought in some of their customers and the companies they work with, and it just became a big topic. And it was mental health, and it became a personal topic. because someone in the store had a relative who had taken their own life because of depression. Mm-hmm. And they said, now, we said, well, how's it going? They said, well, besides the enthusiasm and everybody kind of getting out there and getting involved and us learning more, we've had two weird results. We don't really struggle with satisfaction scores in our survey, employee survey, but we have found over the last 6 months there really hasn't been anything else change our store, and that's gone up by a significant percentage. But the other weird thing is when we begin to tell people, you can take a mental health day, it's a legitimate issue, don't be ashamed of it, people stopped not coming to work. Our absenteeism rate has gone down by a big percentage. Wow. And all we can think is that people are coming in to talk about the things that are bothering them with colleagues who share this, who can empathize, who are, in a sense, not fixing the community, but now they kind of belong to it around this issue. It's created a new identifier, social identity for them.
Which goes back to in-groups and out-groups.
Yeah.
They weren't saying to the community, we're going to do something to help you.
Yeah.
They said, we are you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's great. Do you have any other examples of any of the clients that you worked with that kind of demonstrate something like that?
Well, one of them was at your conference. So BBCon, BlackBaud, they have this conference, right, Jamie? And is it the same place, the same time every year? I think this is the first time Angela and I went.
It's the same time. It's October every year, but it changes places, to different city every year.
Okay. Anyway, so we're doing this. It was a panel, right, Angela?
I think it was a panel, yeah.
I'm on a panel. And so we're talking. Yeah, we were both on that panel. And then this woman came up to us after. She's very excited.
She was very excited. She was grinning.
She was grinning her face off.
Yeah.
And I stumbled because, Jamie, I have this really bad tendency to meet people for the first time two or three times.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Like, you're like, hey, nice to meet you. And they're like, dude, I've totally met you three times. I stood behind you in the coffee line downstairs. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
So anyway.
Yeah, I'm using this as my therapy session.
She came up to us. And she said, 2 years ago, I was part of a transformative volunteering training to become a volunteer leader at my company. And I listened to the training and I went through it. There was a series of three that took a total of 3 hours.
And she was at a call center, right?
She was working at a call center, really boring context. And while this result may not be what every company is looking for, she was so inspired that she quit her job. And she moved into CSR work on her own. She began to study these issues and the psychology of it and the work of motivation and in-groups and out-groups and empathy. And she does this work on her own now and talks to everybody about it. Now, this is actually huge for CSR practitioners because we can get so involved in the strategy, the meeting with our leaders, getting our goals in line, talking to the regional leaders only, the paid staff, and forgetting to go speak to volunteer ambassadors or volunteer champions on the ground. But if you are having a day when you just think you can't do it anymore, you don't know what it's for, you can't find the impact, go talk to your volunteer ambassadors on the ground. Every time I speak with people like her who came up to us at the conference, I think, yes, I can do this.
Yeah. That's right. It is very strange the impact it has, where it pulls you up out of the weeds and you think, oh yeah, that's what's going on. Mm. The way we are as a civilization, as a society, is shifting just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that I picked up on as well. But going back to BBCon, I attended one of your sessions. So it sounds like you guys were all over the place there, which is great. And the session I was in, I thought was excellent. It focused on transformational versus transactional experiences. And one of the reasons why I thought it was really, I think, well presented is because you brought up a volunteer experience that has the potential just to be quite transactional. And it was, I think, painting a house or cleaning a house.
That's right.
It was like a kind of group home or something like that. And, you know, you had discussed, well, if you just go in and you do the work and then you leave and you go on with your day, it's like nothing ever happened. But you said that, a brief sort of 15 minute or even 10 minute, this is why we're here. And this is, why we're doing this. And then the work meant more, and then you talked about it. And so I'm definitely summarizing, and you know, I'm probably ruining the whole thing. Actually.
No. I'm actually grinning. I'm like, that's pretty good. We'll give him a few notes. He can take this one on the road. That's good.
Yeah. Well, why don't you take it from there? And then, you know, cause I think it is important, I think, for anyone listening to this and thinking about this for the first time, I think it is important for them to understand, all right, yeah, if I am going to take a bunch of volunteers and send them, you know, to Africa or put them into something that is quite emotional and is easily transformational, great. But I'm doing all these volunteer activities where people are painting fences or stuffing food into bags and then putting them into boxes and not even meeting the people they're helping. How do you turn that into transformational?
Right. Yeah. And that's the point of the story. We took the same scenario, which is an actual scenario that happened in Atlantic Canada, with an actual event that I was actually at. And we told it two different ways. One was the fairly typical, you go, you do your thing, you're given a t-shirt, you paint, then you leave a little bit early. And it, you know, you did something good, you're thanked, you feel good. There's some natural reward chemicals that are released in your mind. It's your brain, it's good. That's good. But there are a few things that you can add to that to take it to the next level. We call that framing the experience. Mm-hmm. And it involves a couple of pieces. One is the brief beforehand. So typically at the brief, you talk about what you're going to do, how you're going to get it done, but the why it matters. And the why it matters has to include two things. Okay, so you get, just imagine, okay, so you're standing there and you got everybody in this little area in a men's mission, let's say it's, or food bank, food pantry, whatever. And they're in this circle, and you've got an opportunity now to do two things. One is to help them visualize, and the other one is to help them understand why their time absolutely matters right now. And to do that, you've got to paint a picture of who you're helping. So you would say something like say it's a men's mission, listen, thank everybody for coming here today, really appreciate you being here, but I have to tell you, we're not going to make a dent and hunger, like we're like serving one meal on one evening, that is not going to solve the hunger issue. We might actually be contributing to a nourishment issue. Well, that's probably cruel. But sometimes the food in soup kitchens is rough, although Muslim mm-hmm. work really hard at that. But you work with what you're given, right? That's all I mean to say about that. Mm-hmm. So that's Angela's disorienting dilemma. That's what she was talking about earlier, this disorienting dilemma, because then people have to think, well, wait, whoa, why am I here? That's the right question. Now you can kind of be open up to receive. So you'd continue on and say, we're not going to make a dent in hunger. And by the way, we're not here to solve the poor. They're not a problem to be fixed. We all know that, right? But what we are going to do here today is we're going to serve a simple meal, and you're going to spend some time with some men who don't interact with folks that look like you in this way the rest of the week. They are told to get off the curb, get away from the front of my building, go get a job. They are seen as refuse of humanity, if not worse, leeches on the hard work of us. Mm-hmm. But for a little while, we're going to serve them food. And when we do it, we're going to smile. We're going to be courteous. We're going to give them whatever they want. We are going to be the Ritz-Carlton of their lives right now. And we are going to enjoy it because if we can, and you're open to it, they're going to help you remind you. They're going to help remind you of something. And here's what that is. You are not your job. You are not the car you drive, the house you live in. You are not your salary. You are not your education. You are not the sum total of all of the contributions that you make to the GDP. There is something intrinsically valuable in you as a human being that goes beyond any of that. And they have it too. Their humanity is your humanity. Yours is theirs. And they're going to remind you to ask a question. Who are you? Why are you here? Because at the end of the day, when you're in the pine box at the front of the building, you do not want a eulogy that goes something like, he was polite. He never took my parking space. I don't think he stole paper clips. He was always under budget and on time. That's a terrible eulogy, right? But these are the things we fixate on. You want somebody to stand up there and say, he mattered. Bill mattered. Bill, if it wasn't for Bill, I wouldn't be here. Bill did this for me. Bill was this kind of person, this kind of dad. It mattered that Bill was in this world. And you want that to be your eulogy too. So right now, as you hand that plate of food to the person or sit down and eat with the person, they are going to help you remember your humanity. Now, not all of you, we all come with a ton of clutter and a lot of noise. But for some of us here today, you're going to get a very important gift. And that whole little brief, that framing the scenario, that framing the experience, that paints a picture of who Bill is, and it calls you into it so that you belong to it. And we're not just helping people, but that we're joining them. We're coming together in this experience. And they understand the significance of the task because you changed it, right? Mm.
The really important thing about that, Jamie, I'll add, is once people have experienced that moment of disorientation, that moment where their expectation of what was going to happen is not met, they can be lost in that feeling of shame when they think, oh, yeah, this is not, I feel really bad about what I used to think. You know, this is not what I expected. So the purpose then of the person leading the event, that corporate volunteer, that volunteer ambassador, is to guide people through the process of transformation.
Right. Mm.
So they have the moment in the brief where they're told, you are not here to do something to people, you're here to be changed by this experience or be affected at the very least. Mm-hmm. And then they walk them through the event. They check on them throughout the event. They find out if they're relatively a new volunteer, they're more of an experienced volunteer, what they're feeling, what they're experiencing. And most importantly, in the last 10 minutes of the event, and if you have to catch people on the way out before they leave early, then do it then. Ask two questions in order to facilitate critical reflection. This is when people bring meaning to their experience. They begin to process what happened to them, and this is when we can bring it to a place where it changes behavior and drives action.
Right.
And you ask two questions. What did you experience, and was it what you expected? And not everyone has to answer. They just need those questions in their mind to begin to process what they've experienced.
Right.
That's great. Yeah, that's really powerful. I think I'll go back and replay this at the beginning of every day. kidding aside, it's really, really powerful. And I could see how that could work to, you know, really get people, you know, and again, like looking at it two ways, that a person running a CSR program has a job to do and it's difficult, and especially at very large companies. And then just in, as you're saying, the human, you know, just looking at it as being humans and how can we help people, and how can we address some of the problems that are out there. So really, really powerful. So that leads me to a question I wanted to make sure to ask. I had recently seen something in the news about empathy in motion. And I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Empathy in motion is very exciting, Jamie. We've been working on this for just over a year in partnership with SAP. They have a learning platform called OpenSAP. I don't know if you've heard of a MOOC before. Have you heard that term?
I had never heard. I've heard of a MOOC.
I've heard the term before. Yeah.
So this is massive open online courses, and it's actually amazing. If you take a look at MOOCs online, you can learn anything. I mean, yeah. I thought YouTube did this for us, but MOOCs, you can learn crazy stuff.
Don't need to go to university anymore.
That's right.
Just surf the web.
You got it. So we were enabled through OpenSAP's generous time and SAP's partnership, as well as the sponsorship of Toyota and Deloitte. We have been able to create this course on transformative volunteering. So the full title of the course is Empathy in Motion, The Power of Employee Volunteering. And it's in 12 parts, short videos. Chris is talking on the videos, telling his stories, being very entertaining. And you watch the videos and you're taken through part one and then part two, total of 4 hours over as much time as you want. You can take them whenever you want. And you receive quizzes, short quizzes after each one, and you get a certification at the end. So we're very excited about this. And guess what? It's totally free. Do I sound like a salesperson or what? But it's free.
Well, I don't... I mean, are you selling it if you're giving it away?
I guess not. I'm just so excited.
You sound like on the corner of, you know, Young and Bloor in
Toronto.
Nobody knows that one. Okay, so how about in Times Square? Will they give out samples? Here, try this new gum. Try this new gum. Okay. It's kind of like that. I may have reduced the value of what we're talking about here to a stick of gum, but...
Well, it sounds really, really cool. So anyone, even if you're not like enrolled in something with SAP or involved with them in any way, you could just go to it and
anyone in the world.
Anywhere, okay. Yeah, anywhere in the world. And so this is a great thing. Like you, it's not at a particular time. As Angela said, you can just take it. But the course mm-hmm. opens March 15th, 14th?
14th.
14th. Yeah. And it goes for?
4 weeks until April 12th.
So if you take it within that time, right? And a lot of companies are like opening it up to their employees.
Using it as training.
Using, yeah. Right. So they're champions of social change inside of the company. They're saying, mm-hmm. take this, get the certification, wraps up in April. And yeah, so we're expecting tens of thousands of people to sign up. We're very excited about it. And it's along the lines of what we're talking about. So it's not just, here are some lists for the good things that will happen from employee volunteering. Mm-hmm. People will be more satisfied. It's not that kind of thing at all. It's more of the, okay, what happens in your brain and why does that happen?
So basically, yeah. if you're into human motivation, psychology, social behavior, this is...
Organizational behavior, theory of change.
Absolutely. You don't have to be a volunteer or even a CSR practitioner.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I wanted to be like Bill Nye, the science guy for employee volunteering.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's great. And I do have a lot of interest in that myself. I studied psychology in school, and you know, I always make a joke about that after I tell people to hold their applause. And I have a psychology degree.
We should have had an applause button. You know how they have that clapping button?
Yeah.
That would have been great.
And I actually did work in that field for a little while, and then I feel like I became something of a, I don't know, armchair psychologist or something like that. But you know, you guys, like what you're doing is it sounds like it's deeply rooted in, you know, in biology. So do you have anything to add about that? I mean, you guys, are you just throwing around fancy terms or
no,
you guys are?
So there's a lot of really great work in related fields that's just incredibly exciting to bring over.
Yeah, and here's one that's really exciting. I'll try to make this short. So if you know the book Power of Habit, then you're familiar with these concepts, and I recommend it to everyone. This, almost everything we talk about in our work, in the course, applies to everything because it comes from these fields, as you're saying, psychology and others. Now, here's one thing that's really exciting. When you go through a disorienting dilemma, as Chris mentioned early on, something happens in your neurology. We can create new neural pathways in our minds. So if you've ever tried to start a new habit, start doing something new, whether it's working out or eating better, it's painful.
Yeah, like literally, we avoid it because there's pain involved. Like that's why we don't do it.
So you're all normal if you couldn't start that new habit as easily as you expected. Because here's what's happening. Your brain is pushing through. Okay, so imagine you're walking down a concrete path on, let's say, a college campus, and you see this person, the other person, walk across the grass, and they take a shortcut, and you think, huh, okay, so that's your moment, at the disorienting dilemma where you alert to something different than you expected, right? Alert. And then you think, well, maybe I'll take that path. And so you start walking on that path, but now fill that pathway with blackberry bushes. And you are pushing through and breaking through and trying to get through, and it's scratching your arms, and it's hard. So that day you just go back to the concrete path again. But the next day you try again. And this is our brain beginning to literally create a new pathway, and it hurts. But over time, you take that path so many times, and this is as you begin to orient to a new behavior in your own life. You decide, what does this mean for me? Am I going to continue this? Is it worth it? And as it's worth it, you keep going. Eventually, it's a clear dirt path. And before long, they just go ahead and concrete that path too. Yeah. So the three actions are, and I sort of skipped the third in the story, is alert, orient, and act. And that's what we do every time we want to start a new habit. And that's the kind of work that we're doing here. We're putting people in a place where they alert to something that could be different in their lives, and then give them a path to orient to it, and then act. And then we have new neural pathways, and we're better people.
That's great. I love that. And I think also, as we're talking about this, you know, as you look to create transformational experiences, you know, as opposed to transactional ones, then you're involving emotion then. And that's, you know, also a powerful area of your brain. And do you guys have any, is there any science behind that?
Yeah. So the empathy part of the discussion, this is in the, we hit this one up, obviously, in the MOOC first up, but emotion has to be a part of the change. You can't just think your way into a new way of behaving or a new habit. It's it's just impossible. So the emotion part, what we phrase emotion, obviously is chemical concoctions released in the brain. So when we design events, we do it in a way where we can take advantage of the way our brains are wired. Mm-hmm. So that gets back to visualization. I have to be able to visualize the person, and there's an emotional part of that storyline that has to happen there. And then task significance. And then there's this we call it proximity to the beneficiary. Adam Grant's done some research in this area. Highly recommend his book Give and Take, as well as his other research, his more academic papers. But it talks about, you know, proximity to the beneficiary actually can create a more of a stronger
alert orient act
just by visualization. We don't have time to go into it, but just to your point, Jamie, without emotion, zero. It's like going to one of those movies where you're thinking, oh, I hope all of the good people in this movie get killed somehow, because something's got to make it better. Like, this is just so boring and predictable, like, right. Like a corporate press release.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's known that, you know, memories are stronger when they're connected to emotion.
Yeah.
And so I guess that plays a part.
Yeah, absolutely. In all that.
Okay. This has been fascinating, and I feel like, maybe we'll continue this dialogue and get together again. Also, I'll definitely want to follow up with you and get your reading list. some great, great information there to be had. Is there anything else that you feel like we didn't touch upon? Anything else you want to add before we conclude?
Well, Jamie, it's great to know that you're into this stuff. We'd love to have a coffee sometime and chat about it more.
Yeah, yeah. You're in, are you in D.C.?
So, yeah, I'm in New York and New Jersey.
Okay.
I get to occupy both of those states. So as you're coming on through, or I'll let you know when I'm traveling around. I know you guys are on the road a lot. We can meet up.
Awesome. And in the meantime, for anybody who's listening to this, you can check out a number of resources on our blog, our website, realizeworth.com, as you've already mentioned, but also RW Institute, which is a think tank to deal with some of these bigger issues and go into areas of research that haven't been envisioned yet. So rw.institute, be sure to go there, and that's where you can find out information about the MOOC, because the MOOC is a program or project of the Institute. So those are two opportunities for everybody.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Chris, Angela, thank you so much for joining us today. It was excellent to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jamie. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Jamie. This was great.
Yeah. Yeah, for our listeners, as you heard, you should check out realizeworth.com. You should check out the Realize Worth Institute. Check out the MOOC. And you can also follow them on Twitter at Realize Worth. And you're encouraged to connect with Chris and Angela on LinkedIn. And please make sure to subscribe to our podcast here so you don't miss an episode. And you can keep up with the conversation between episodes by following us on Twitter at Jamie Serino, at MicroEdge LLC, and at BlackBod. Thank you for listening.